Blog Talk Radio.
Hudson County, folks overlooking the greatest city in the world, you know that Insider NJ proudly brings to you Politically Direct. And I am the Professor Fernando Uribe. I want to welcome you all here tonight, the 3rd of May, the year 2018, as we're starting to see some warm weather finally throughout the Garden State. I hope it's here to stay. And once again, I want to thank you all for listening from wherever you are right here in New Jersey. Of course, ladies and gentlemen, you're right to the show's inbox, which is politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Again, if you have any suggestions for topics or guests, do me a favor. Don't hesitate. Write to the show, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. And don't forget to follow the show on Instagram @politicallydirectnj. New followers every day, brand new likes, awesome content that I make it a point to upload as often as I possibly can. So again, follow the show @politicallydirectnj on Instagram. You can also follow me directly on Instagram @your_favorite_Fernando. Some political humor, some sports, everything in between. You'll find my Instagram just as entertaining as well. Folks, again, don't forget to follow me on Twitter @FernandoUribeJr. Almost at 6,000 legit followers, so I'm very happy about that. And if you can, again, just follow me there on Twitter @FernandoUribeJr. For all of you Facebook subscribers, please take a moment and like the official page for Politically Direct. Tell your friends to do the same. 340 plus likes and counting. Really, it's I'm flattered and I'm really humbled by the support online that I'm getting each and every day for the show. So again, ladies and gentlemen, share the page on your social media. Tell your friends about your favorite podcast covering Jersey politics here each and every Thursday night here. It's always Politically Direct. Now, I do want to hear from you tonight at some point, so don't be shy and call me toll-free, 818-572-8032. Again, toll-free number, 818-572-8032, and it is brought to you by Insider NJ. Now, don't forget to check out Insider NJ, ladies and gentlemen, by going to www.insidernj.com for the absolute best coverage of the political scene throughout the state of New Jersey. Once you go on the main page, click on the subscribe button. You'll get the morning intelligence briefing conveniently delivered absolutely free to your inbox. So while you're having breakfast, maybe walking your dog, having, you know, a cigarette in the morning, who knows, or just hopefully enjoying this great weather to start your day, and you're on your smartphone or your tablet, folks, you'll get to see all the latest news conveniently delivered to your inbox courtesy of the Morning Intelligence Briefing brought to you by Insider NJ. Again, check them out every single morning, afternoon, and night, folks, www.insidernj.com. Don't forget to start your day with Insider NJ. Now, the opinions and views expressed tonight and every week on Politically Direct are mine and mine alone. They do not represent those of Insider NJ, the management, the guests, journalists, or staff. Folks, again, I hope you're having a wonderful start to the month of May. It's my birthday month, and of course, as a Taurus, we all know that for my fellow Taurians listening tonight, you know, we're the best sign out there, and it's our month. We're going to live it up as much as possible. So again, to all the May babies, all the birthdays coming up here. And even, listen, get to enjoy Cinco de Mayo this Saturday for all of you out there. Again, please enjoy it responsibly. And this warm weather, hey, listen, it's great to see it. And hopefully, again, it's here to stay. Again, folks, toll-free number tonight, 818-572-8032. I want to hear from you tonight at some point. Lines will be open. And again, our toll-free number is brought to you by Insider NJ. And as always, ladies and gentlemen, I like to get started with my first shot. Folks, you know, it's some very interesting times that we're living in here in New Jersey right now in 2018, as we know that, in January, Phil Murphy took the oath of office, becoming the state's newest governor. And certainly, with his new administration came a very different direction in terms of what we were used to here in the Garden State for the previous 8 years. We know that progressive policies are now dominating the narrative. And we know that many of us, homeowners and taxpayers like myself, are very concerned about the economic climate that's pervasive here in New Jersey. And I have a great guest coming up in just a few minutes who's definitely going to shed some light on how dire the situation is or is going to continue becoming here in the Garden State. But first things first, you know, it's I'm concerned like anybody else. And this is not me being a partisan because, again, I'm not speaking ideologically here. I'm speaking as a concerned taxpayer. And I know that Governor Murphy, upon taking office, had pledged to raise taxes by $1.6 billion. And his justification was to compensate underfunded school districts, for example, to subsidize community college tuition for low-income students, to also increase pension funding, and of course, expand pre-K programs in the Garden State. Now, after state budget analysis mentioned that tax collections were especially unpredictable this year, we even saw that Budget Committee Chairman Paul Sarlo, a Democrat out of Woodridge, it said that lawmakers should hold off on any new taxes. Now, regardless of that, the governor still proposed a 7% levy on retail sales, which is tied to the second highest rate among the states and up from the current 6.625%. Now, again, if you all remember, much of the compromise having to do with the gas tax was lowering the sales tax. Now, high-income earners would see their state income tax rate increased to 10.75%, which coincidentally would be the third highest in the country from the current 8.97%. Governor Murphy also proposed new taxes on ride-sharing services like Uber and Lyft, home sharing sites like Airbnb. He's even advocated very strongly about legalizing recreational marijuana and using the revenue from the sales and investment profits to, again, fund the, as I mentioned before, the pension system here in New Jersey. Certainly, a lot of school districts throughout the state are underfunded. Many of them are using textbooks from like 1989, which is just absolutely atrocious. Certainly, the very scary dynamic of subsidizing community college tuition for low-income students, basically free community college here, which, again, and I'll get to in just a little while with my guest about how much of a disservice that is to taxpayers. And even, you know, the idea of bending over backwards for illegal immigrants in New Jersey is drawing significant attention and backlash for the governor, even within his own party. And I find it interesting when I hear this taking place with Governor Murphy. And, you know, I've had the chance to talk to the governor on a couple of occasions. You'll be happy to know sometime in early June, we're just trying to sort of finalize his appearance onto the show, and I'm looking forward to having the governor call in and be a guest here. As you know, as you've been listening to this program since its inception in January, I make it a point, ladies and gentlemen, to be fair, to be concise, and to ask tough questions, but again, to be fair. And I know that there are many within his own party that are deeply concerned about sort of the economic path that Governor Murphy is looking to take us on. And certainly one of the leading Democrats that you can tell is looking to perhaps put, you know, step on the brakes here in terms of Governor Murphy's vision is, to no one's surprise, State Senate President Steve Sweeney, down from the 3rd Legislative District in South Jersey, I believe in Camden County, if I'm not mistaken. And you could tell right from the onset, folks, that this was not going to be a marriage made in heaven. You know, on more than one occasion, you can see publicly that the governor and arguably the second most powerful Democrat in New Jersey are not seeing eye to eye on not just the millionaire's tax, but looking as to what else to tax in New Jersey. And to me, you know, it's interesting that we're seeing sort of this, the idea of, again, raising the state income tax rate for high income earners. I'm not one of them, so I mean, I don't think I'll ever see that tax rate, but it's something to aspire to, of course. But folks, it's scary to have that now become the third highest in the country. Listen, it was interesting to me last summer and going into the fall that we saw so many millennials in New Jersey come out very openly for then candidate Phil Murphy when he talked about, again, the necessity of legalizing recreational marijuana in New Jersey. And that was, again, music to the ears of many millennials in New Jersey. But little did they know, obviously, as we're seeing the proposition of new taxes on services that, quite frankly, millennials use quite often. And the fact of, you know, levying a new tax on ride-sharing services such as Lyft and Uber, even home sharing sites like Airbnb, I mean, that, let me tell you something, gentlemen, that is going to hit the pockets of many millennials and a lot of, never mind millennials, but I think a lot of even 25 to 35-year-old individuals in New Jersey. And to be very honest, I mean, this is scary. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, all I can say is that we're having a tremendous type of backlash against this governor and what he's looking to do from a fiscal perspective. Again, my guest coming up in just a moment is going to shed some light on that and really, I don't want to seem apocalyptic here and seem that I'm sort of proposing a very doomsday scenario for New Jersey, but folks, we're in serious trouble. So I think it's important that we try to hold this governor accountable and really ask questions, I think, because we deserve to ask. You know, we're the taxpayers. You know, the legislature and the governor work for us. We don't work for them. And I'm hoping that they remember that at some point. All right, folks, and that tonight is my first shot. Again, call in toll-free tonight, 818-572-8032. Toll-free number brought to you by Insider NJ. And now, ladies and gentlemen, at 8:12 past the hour here on the East Coast, it's my pleasure to welcome to Politically Direct a brand-new friend of the show, Mr. Joseph Caruso, the chairman of the Organization for Economic Growth. Mr. Caruso, welcome to Politically Direct, sir.
Hi, how are you? Could you hear me?
I can hear you. You sound a little bit distant. I don't know if you have good reception or if you're on speakerphone.
Is this better?
Yeah, it's a little bit better. That's a little bit better, Mr. Caruso. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
My pocket might not be doing so great in the next 4 years, and we'll get to that in a minute. But again, you know, I want to welcome you to the show. And again, I had the chance to do some homework on the OEG before your appearance tonight. Can I call you Joe? Is that okay?
Can I call you Joe? Yeah, call me Joe. You just don't call me Phil.
Okay. Well, definitely. You know, Joe, I took the opportunity to do some homework this week on the OEG, and certainly, you know, reading the mission statement for the OEG. And again, folks, if you have a chance, you can check out their website, which is www.njoeg.com. Very informative content, a lot of great stuff to read up on. And Joe, one of the things, again, I don't know how much you had a chance to listen to my monologue, but as a homeowner and taxpayer, you know, I don't want to push the panic button too quickly right now, but I'm deeply concerned about the economic climate in New Jersey. How do you see things?
Well, you didn't put your house up for sale to move to Texas yet?
Well, listen, I'm a devoted member of the Dallas Cowboys, and I'm a devoted fan of them. And believe me, if I could go to Texas, I would. But I love my home state. I love New Jersey. I'm not leaving.
You sure?
No, absolutely. Yeah, I can watch the Cowboys from New Jersey.
I'm just making sure because it might, you know, it can make things easier for you. You could go to South Carolina too. I hear it's a nice state as well.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And you know, Joe, I have to say that, you know, it would be funny if it wasn't downright tragic about what's going on and what's been going on for some time in New Jersey. And you know, again, it's interesting to me that a lot of the media in the Garden State isn't taking the governor to task on this because we're seeing it. And I just threw some numbers out there about raising the sales tax, raising the tax rate.
The underlying, you know, and I'm not going to sit here and say, well, the governor's great. He just got in. He's proposing a lot of silly stuff, which I think are more campaign promises than anything else. And, and kind of the proverbial give back to the folks that got him in, which, you know, it's, but remember, these governors are here for 8 years. So New Jersey's problem is not a four or an 8 year issue. New Jersey's issue has been a systemic issue over decades. And I think that people need to address the true underlying issue in this state, you know, and I'm not saying that, by all means, I'm not defending, you know, Murphy. I think some of the stuff he's proposing and some of the stuff that he's been doing is asinine, but the underlying issue, I think, stems, you know, predominantly in the legislature. Because look at the number of years a lot of the state senators and assemblymen and women have been in office, and then look at during those periods of time what's happened to the state, especially on a tax basis. Now, who do you blame? I mean, the legislature would love you to blame Murphy all the time, right? Because he's there now, and it's an easy way out, but. Where have they been, and what have they been doing over the last 10, 20, 30 years?
Well, you know what, Joe, and you raise a great point about that. And folks, again, if you're just joining us now here at 8:16 on the East Coast here on Blog Talk Radio, it's my pleasure to have Joe Caruso, the chairman of the Organization for Economic Growth. You can check him out online at www.njoeg.com. And, Joe, listen, you raise a great point there about the legislature, and it's interesting because – we've seen a lot of legislators there that are, again, a lot of them are lifelong career politicians in both parties. And again, one of the things that frustrates me, and you know, I even said this to some colleagues of mine, you know, working in academia. One of my colleagues had the audacity to say to me, "Well, you know, Fernando, I'm glad that, you know, at least now, you know, Murphy can attempt to try to repair or undo a lot of the harm that Chris Christie did." And listen, I'm not going to sit here and defend Chris Christie. There are a lot of things I can take him to task on. But what's interesting about the dynamic, Joe, is that basically, you know, when Chris Christie took office in January 2010, I mean, he pretty much dealt with a very combative legislature. And, it, you know, in his position, there's only so much you can do with a veto pen as it pertains
right.
to a state budget and looking at
right.
where to cut spending or where to put a cap on property taxes
here's where I'll disagree with you. I'll disagree with you on that, and this is my fundamental problem. Where was the – and again, I'm looking at New Jersey's voter population where you have so many voters that are technically or unaffiliated voters, right? And they do swing mm-hmm. either way. I mean, you had a Republican governor come in, and you've had some legislative seats move at times both ways. So my question is when you have good, business-friendly, citizen-friendly legislation, and you know it's not going to pass in the legislature, how come the average citizen doesn't know about it? Well, there's a little blurb here, a little blurb there. Where are the party apparatus, so to speak, pushing that message down to the Republican voters, the Democrat voters, the undeclared voters, saying, look, if we do this, this will build a better business climate, which means more jobs, better wage competitiveness, you know, higher incomes, better quality of life, blah, blah, blah. You don't really hear it. So if you have the power of the governor, or you have the power of a state senate seat, a state assembly seat, and you really want to fight back and you really want to fix things in New Jersey, it's not so much of crying about it or saying, well, we're not going to propose these things because they're just going to fail because the Democrats control the legislature. Scream, yell, protest, you know, have a rally about it and don't stop and be pervasive about it until that underlying message in simple layman's terms can make it down to the undeclared voter. Now, I don't think people really understand it, but I ask everybody one question. How many people do you know are planning to leave the state once they retire?
Well, offhand, Joe, I don't know too many right now, but I can foresee a huge jettison out of New Jersey because, you know, we're looking at property taxes continue to be the highest in the country. We continue to see an income tax rate for high-end earners, for example, third in the country. We're seeing that the state sales tax, I think is eighth in the country, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, the entire idea of the gas tax when it was proposed was let's lower the sales tax And this way we can sort of make it easier on motorists and the taxpayer. The problem, though, Joe, is, again, and you know, again, there are variables that we could discuss, and, you know, they're sort of global and things of that nature. But the bottom line is that, you know, at some point we knew that a gallon of gas was going to go up again. I mean, we were very fortunate in the last three years or so that a gallon of gas had gone down even below $2 at some point. Now, once the gas tax kicked in, we saw, you know, gallons over $2 again. And we were like, okay, well, at some point it's inevitable that, you know, the petroleum and a barrel of oil is just going to increase on the global marketplace. And, you know, and the problem is, and I always say this to my students is, you know, those that advocate for taxation and those that talk about the goodness of taxation and why we need certain taxes because we need to raise funds, the problem is, and I tell this to my students all the time, once you incorporate and introduce a tax, it doesn't get withdrawn, Joe. I mean, the state income tax was supposed to be
It doesn't get withdrawn. It keeps growing. But here's the issue. This is something I always explain to people, and I say, look, you know, New Jersey has a lot of blessings too. We have a lot of companies that are domiciled here, right? We have a lot of rich people that live here. A lot of businesses.
For now.
I think you got well, you still do. I mean, you got 21 Fortune 500s, I think, in the state. You got 200 publicly traded companies. You got all this great stuff, right? So you have all that income. You have all those businesses. You have all those wealthy people that are very highly taxed, right? So everybody knows we're the highest tax state or one or two in every different category as far as the highest tax state in the nation. So you have all that money, businesses and wealthy people and public corporations and stuff like that, right? That's very highly taxed. But we're in debt. What does that tell you? Does it tell you that, you know, we're spending the money smartly? We're spending the money, you know, properly? Or we're not spending the money properly? It's like a husband and a wife making $2-3 million a year each, living in a small one-bedroom apartment with no car, no other expenses, but they're in debt up to their eyeballs. You're going to say, well, where's all the money going?
Absolutely.
A lot of money.
Absolutely. No, absolutely.
You know,
one thing that really – and Joe, I'm sorry to cut you off. One thing that really stands out for me about this narrative, and it's not just coming from the governor's office. As you mentioned, I mean, this is a systemic problem that's been transpiring in New Jersey for years, going back to even before Governor Christie, going back to Corzine, going back some years now. And what really stands out for me, I think, is sort of the apathy, I think, that New Jersey voters have concerning these issues. I'll give you an example. Last November, to the best of my knowledge, Joe, I believe that only 43% of registered voters in New Jersey voted last November in the gubernatorial election. Now, if you know anything about state politics, you'll know that, you know, for every registered Republican in New Jersey, there are three registered Democrats. I mean, that lopsided majority in terms of an electorate has been there for years. The reality is that independents decide elections. If you remember back in 2009, you know, then candidate Chris Christie doesn't win the governor's seat if it weren't for independents. Okay, I mean, for the most part, you know, a lot of voters are vote very partisan. They vote along party lines. You know, independents, for the most part, whenever an election is close in New Jersey, they decided. And what happened last November? You had two, let's be very honest, you had two very uninspiring candidates, and you saw less than half of registered voters come out to vote. And I tell this to people all the time. It's like, you know, you kind of deserve what you get for not being more involved. And I understand the dynamic of voter apathy. I mean, it's something that's a problem on the national level, too. When you look at, you know, every 4 years, you know, slightly more than half of registered voters only vote in our presidential election, which is downright scary, too. But the reality is, I tell people all the time, especially after last November, you get what you vote for. You know, if you're concerned about taxation, you're concerned about the fact that certain businesses might be leaving New Jersey, or the fact that New Jerseyans are just finding it too expensive to live here, and they're going to move to Delaware, or they're going to move out to Pennsylvania. They can move to North Carolina and buy a home.
The problem is the population needs to be educated on how, in simple, you know what? The human attention span is 8 seconds. So how do you get in front of someone and basically explain to them that if you have more businesses here, you can actually levy a smaller tax because you have a broader tax base. If you have more wealthy people here and more people earning higher incomes here, you could actually lower the taxes by broadening the tax base. The more people off unemployment and employed, right, reduces the cost of government, increases the tax receipts, and you could therefore continue to lower the tax base. People can't connect the dots. I don't think the political establishment does a great job in explaining it in layman's terms and in an ongoing, you know, way in messaging to the general voter population. It seems to me Labor Day comes, everybody runs out. Our candidates are better. They're low tax, more jobs, low tax, more jobs, with no real true, you know, meat and potatoes behind it, other than we're the low tax, we get jobs candidate, but really doesn't mean anything. The state needs school reform. We need, you know, consolidation. We need pension reform and down to real true pension reform. They need to be thinking about down the road of bringing on, you know, a private 401k system. They need to really analyze the healthcare costs. Things need to be done on a systemic level. They need to clean the bureaucracy out in the state. There needs to be a real strong audit in the state to look at all these positions that are continually created as another layer of political favoritism, that even when that person who takes that job walks away, it is quickly filled with somebody else. And go look through all the state and even county level jobs that exist and start asking yourself, what do we need all these people for? And then you get into other things like, why are we funding programs? And again, this isn't a conversation about, you know, the illegal immigration situation. But my issue is, I get it, I understand it, but I can't go to any country and say, well, you know what, I want to go, I'm going to join your healthcare and your school system. I lived in Italy, I lived in Canada, that doesn't exist. You cannot walk into a school system and put your kid into a school system of another country. These are foreign nationals that the state decides to say, well, you know what, we're going to provide an education for them. Well, once you do that, then you're increasing your cost of education, your teachers. Those teachers are then going to be part of a pension system. And where is the return? And when people start to say, well, they, you know, they pay taxes and there's a return, there isn't. There's a lot of statistical data on that. You know, the programs that we use in this state that fund programs for illegal immigrants range, it depends on how you look at it, in simple terms, just between education, incarceration, and healthcare are at $2.4 billion. And when you start layering in everything else, you know, wear and tear on roads, public transit, et cetera, taking even into account the tax receipts, you could snowball that up all the way up to $4 billion. So whether it's programs for illegal immigrants, whether it's, you know, the pension system, which is a massive crisis that's ballooning out of control, whether it's the school funding formula, whether it's embracing shared services, this is a systemic, you know, multi-layered problem that needs to be addressed piecemeal, one part at a time, but no one's addressing it. Instead, they're giving out raises. I think he agreed to give raises out to 32,000 state employees. Is that a payback to support him to get into the governor's seat?
Joe, it's astonishing to me when I hear, and I'm glad you brought up that perspective about the way that. And I've talked about this on my program before. I talked about this with Assemblyman Carroll a couple of weeks ago and a few other legislators as well on the show. And it's, listen, I mean, I'm the son of an immigrant, okay? I'm the son of two immigrants, my mother, my father, as many of us are.
Mm-hmm.
And believe me, I, as a first-generation American, I know firsthand the struggles of immigrants. I saw my parents come here, you know, under different circumstances. My mom left, you know, tyranny and communism down in Cuba for a better life and for freedom. My dad left a pretty mediocre economy in Colombia to come here to a better economy. And they both came for a better life. And they didn't come here for a handout. They didn't come here expecting anything. They came here and worked hard. And they bestowed that work ethic on me. And I never forgot that. And I never forgot something that I carry to this day. But I understand the idea of being sympathetic and having empathy. It just seems that Governor Murphy is like bending over backwards for a population here in New Jersey that, quite frankly, you know, is going to be costly to the taxpayer. And
even worse than that. It's absolutely worse than that, because when you have other states that are cooperating with ICE, where do you think those people are going to go? They're going to go to New Jersey.
Absolutely.
You're rolling out the red carpet. oh, well, why don't we give them in-state tuition price? I mean, it doesn't end. And then at one point or another, you're breaking the backs of the taxpayers. You're breaking the backs of your own citizens. They're leaving the state. And then what do you say to them when they're packing their bags and they're going? I mean, it's embarrassing to have the governor of Texas make the comments that he made. It's absolutely – how bad of a situation is it to be that much of a public spectacle, and you sit there smiling about it, and say, well, why don't we just give some more stuff away? It's only taxpayer money. Who cares? We'll just raise taxes. I mean, that's just ridiculous. Well, it's to the point of disgust in this state.
No, listen, Joe, I agree with you. And what bothers me, too, is that we start seeing sort of the surfacing of identity politics get introduced into the narrative where, hey, by the way, I'm not a racist, nor am I a bigot,
right,
because I have this opinion. Number one, I'm Hispanic, so if I want to play that card, I can do that. But I don't want to.
Right.
I'm speaking as a concerned taxpayer. And what bothers
right.
me, and listen, and what boggles my mind, Joe, is, you know, working in higher education like I do, I mean, the idea that this is so pervasive in academia, I mean, I have colleagues that look at me and say, you know, there's just a population in New Jersey that is scared and that they don't have any hope or recourse. I'm like, yeah, but you know what? No offense. If you're going to try to convince people that you want to set a certain amount of millions of dollars, which, by the way, from what I read, Joe, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think even the governor lowballed the number because it's probably going to cost more in terms of whether
oh, yeah.
it's community college or, you know, providing legal representation to illegals in New Jersey. And at the end of the day, it's like, do me a favor. Can we have some relief for taxpayers? Like, listen, I understand the premise of, okay, well, you listen, if he wants to hang his hat on free community college, well, what does that say to someone like me who's paying back his loans from graduate school or other New Jerseyans that either took out loans or worked through school? You know what? Why not give us the relief? No offense.
There is,
and I know
there
this sounds extremely
there
cruel. What I was saying was, no offense.
Yeah.
I mean, what I'm trying to say to my audience tonight, Joe, and I don't want to sound offensive, but no offense, screw them. Like, help taxpayers, help citizens.
Right.
That should be the mission. And that's infuriating, Joe. I'm sorry, go on.
No, you're right. And my issue where they, and you want my personal opinion, and I think it's pretty sad, that they use swaths of humans, of people that are here illegally. I think they're using them as pawns. And when I saw on, I think it was Cory Booker's page, and they're talking about, you know, profiling this particular person or that particular person, and this is sad and that's sad, and we don't want people coming to a wall. Well, then why don't, you know, question, as someone who's in the Senate and who has the ear of hopefully of the president and the rest of the Senate and everybody else, especially when the eight-year period under Obama, why couldn't they push the president to increase the number of legal immigrants per year, which was, I think, what are we, around 1 million immigrants per year, or is it 1 million or 1.6 million? I forgot what the number is. And we have a quota system, I think it's no more than, what, 6 or 7% per country. And again, I don't have it in front of me, the actual numbers. But if you really care about all those people that are coming across the border and what the struggles that they go through to become into the United States, then why don't you loosen the immigration policy or work with the president, especially when, again, I'll go back to when Obama was in the office, and especially the period of time they had control of the House and Senate. Why couldn't they have pressured the president to edit, change, or make changes to the immigration policies? No, they don't do that. Instead, they let people come here illegally, then they vilify anybody who speaks out against it, and then they use them as pawns for political propaganda. I don't think that – I think it's dehumanizing what they do to those people, honestly. Honestly, they're using them, and I think it's sad. And I think if they need to honestly – readdress the immigration policy. They need to really take into consideration and do something about the country's borders. And they should stop rolling out the red carpet for people that violate our laws. Instead, if you really believe we have a need for more people in this country, more than the current immigration quota system is, then push to change the system. Don't allow things to go the way they are. Fight ICE, our own people that are responsible for this, our own border security. instead they fight that, and then they vilify anybody who speaks out against it, and they use these people as political pawns. That's dehumanizing, it's wrong, and that needs to end too. But I guess it's okay if you're a liberal.
And you know what? And that's the problem, because now we're getting ideological into the way that we view economics. And that's something that, to me, Joe, is mind-boggling. And we'll get to that in a minute. But I sort of wanted to cut away for a minute, because I wanted to sort of give my audience tonight an opportunity to really learn more about the OEG, because maybe they're not familiar with it, but they're a great organization. And what got you interested in, again, in working? Because, I mean, again, I'm looking at your team. It's a wonderful group of young men and women. I mean, a shout-out to a good friend of mine on your team, your vice chairwoman, Katie Saracola. She's just great. She's a great contributor, a great, you know, political scientist, in my opinion. So a shout-out to Katie, who I know personally, and certainly I know that Alex, your executive director, has been a big follower of mine on social media. So a shout out to Alex. But I mean, you're working with a great staff of people with the OEG. And what got you interested, really, in forming this team?
Well, I felt, and I kind of mentioned it a little bit, but I felt that the voter population in this state, and we just started only a few months ago, but our goal is to raise awareness, spread messaging, do some research or ongoing research. We're going to be conducting polls, and to get the truth out to the voting population of the state as to what certain economic principles really means when it comes to politics, and how our political establishment, Democrats and Republicans, actually could affect change in a state. Like you said before, these are citizens that are looking for, and I've heard this before, they're looking for a better life in this state. You want job stability. You want the ability to raise a family. You want the ability to send your kids to school. You want the ability to retire, again, all with hard work. But when the opportunities aren't there because of poor political decisions, or the cost of living is too high because of poor political decisions, or maybe they're decisions that are made in a selfish way to satiate the needs of their friends and political cohorts that hurt the citizenry, they need to hear about it. They need to see it. They need to understand it. And where I felt that we would fit in is to basically fulfill that void that I see, really, that lies within not just so much the Republican Party, but the entire political establishment in the state, where, the idea of good government might be misunderstood. The idea and the role of a politician, a legislator, or a governor might be misunderstood. And to re-educate that population and hopefully steer them in the right direction. On another fold, we want to support, and we are supporting, candidates that we believe are in the best interests for the state's economy. And we've just started, and I think it's going to snowball from here. There's a lot of good people we're looking at that we could get involved in, whether it's an endorsement, or we could fund some of their campaign, or we could put some messaging behind them. But we're looking to help support candidates that we believe are in the best interests of the taxpayer of the state, not the best interests of the small political cabal that controls the state at the current moment.
When I look at, again, the mission statement, and folks, again, if you haven't had a chance, check out their website. It's really informative, www.njoeg.com, for the Organization for Economic Growth here in New Jersey. Joe, one of the things that stood out for me as I was, again, doing my homework this week on your organization really was transparency and just the guiding principles. And, again, and for my listeners tonight that are maybe hearing about you for the first time, of the guiding principles, let me tell you, the one that stood out for me, they're all worthwhile, but the one that stood out for me reads as the following: to promote and engage in lively, informative public debate about economic policy and enlisting activist citizens in the fight to create a climate that permits business to flourish. Strong economic policies and job-creating actions must be supported so Americans can thrive. Joe, I love the way that's worded, because I think that in today's political climate, you don't see politicians from either party use that language. And quite honestly, it's disappointing to me.
Well, hopefully we could change that, right? I mean, it's going to start someplace. I'm hoping that we could be, you know, a force of change with that. And again, you know, we're, you know, people, they're in this state, they're living in this state, and they want to have the ability to live free, live comfortably, and with hard work, reap the benefits. And, you know, we feel that the political, if the political discussion of our elected officials or candidates could push more or revolve more around economic and fiscal policy, I think you could have more informative debate and intellectual and intelligent conversations, because what's happening, and you see it, everything goes to whatever the polarized issue is, and the argument becomes more social issues. And I said this once about 10 years ago. I think it was to an editorial board. And they were talking about, I had some issue with an open space fund, and I made a comment. I said, well, if the state goes broke, you could kiss the open space funds goodbye. You could kiss all any social programs that are there to help our less fortunate goodbye. Kiss it all goodbye. I mean, at one point you have to say, if we keep doling everything out to everybody, you're eventually going to run out of stuff to give out. And, you know, some of these politicians should read, I think it was that Giving Tree book, you know, and not take your citizen taxpayers for granted, because eventually they won't be there anymore.
Joe, in the sense of, and again, you have a great team from what I can see there on the roster, what's been the biggest challenge for you in recent months as it pertains to either fundraising or getting collectively this group of people to really make a dent in the narrative statewide? What do you think?
I mean, I think that the biggest issue that, I mean, the issues that we're confronted with are, which drives me absolutely nuts, is the following roadblocks that are always put up by elected officials and quote-unquote political insiders. You ready? What do they want? Why are they here? What are they doing? Why do they want to help us? Joe's going to run for office. That's the only reason why he wants to do this. I mean, come on. I don't want to run for office. I'll never run for office again. I did it once. It'll never happen again. But that's all you ever hear. And it's almost like everyone's protecting their little territories because, God forbid, you raise awareness someplace. So it's been a roadblock sometimes when you're trying to make the right connections of people within towns or counties. It's been it's more of a challenge when you're trying to raise money behind an issue because it's, well, why am I giving to you? But I also find it to be more of an open road right now because I don't feel that the political county organizations or state organizations, I will make a nice comment, and I don't know him, but from what I'm seeing so far, actually, I think Steinhardt's doing a pretty good job. I'm not a real good judge of that stuff, but I actually see that there's messaging, and I'm actually reading some of the stuff he's putting out there. But I think that for donors or people who want to get involved, people want to gravitate around something or an entity that's doing something. So I think that is probably more of the easier side of the fence, and because there isn't any real strong, overbearing establishment on either party right now, meaning in the form of messaging and organizing and, you know, stuff like that, it's been a little bit easier on that end. But fundraising is always difficult because everybody's attitude is, well, what am I going to give you money for exactly? And especially when it's not tied to a specific candidate so much.
To ask, I mean, perhaps maybe you don't want to drop any names or sort of, you know, throw anyone under the bus, but have there been any legislators that you've dealt with, again, in your capacity in recent times that have been either very combative with you or uncooperative? And it just makes you just sit there and scratch your head about, you know, why they're being so defensive or so combative. Anybody, you know, you care to name or maybe a quick story for our audience about how challenging this has been?
I mean, honestly, it's been, you know, I'll give credit where credit's due, you know, current legislators who have been, I think, awesome to us. So, like, Senator Corrado and former Senator O'Toole, those guys have been great to us. But there are other members of the legislature that I will not name names because I don't need to get into any more arguments with people. But it's not so much of, like, they're combative, but it's almost dismissive. It's like, you know, oh, yeah, sure, I'll give you a call, or, you know, we'll be in touch, or, yeah, we'll work together, and then they disappear. And if you reach out to them, you don't get a call back or whatever. And you know what? I'm not the type of person that calls twice. So after a while, I wouldn't say combative at this point, but I would say almost avoiding, you know, or we don't want to be involved with them at this point, but we'll see. I mean, you know, we're willing to play nice with everybody. We're willing to help and support some of these people. So I would think that it would be a good idea to work together, and that includes Democrats too. I don't have a particular, I think some of the stuff that Sweeney's doing, I'm pretty impressed with. I've even seen some of the comments coming out of Paul Sorlo, and I put that out there. I think you should have him on your show. I mean, you know, either I have two schools of thought with this, or two frames of thought with this. Either A, they're seeing the light, or B, they're starting to realize we don't have any money anymore.
Well, you know what? I have a theory as well, Joe. And again, I think that with Sweeney being, many would argue, the second most powerful, most important Democrat in the state of New Jersey, I think in sort of the pecking order, I think the governor kind of overplayed his hand. I think he was sort of expecting that as soon as he entered office, that because your name has a D next to it, that, oh, everyone's going to fall in line and whatever the governor wants, he's going to get. And I just had a feeling from insiders that I talked to in Trenton that reach out to me and you know, on the basis of, you know, anonymity, talk to me and give me some scoops and just say, hey, you know, Sweeney understands that from a financial perspective and an economic perspective, you can't just hand over the keys to the store and think that, you know, you can tax your way to prosperity. Listen, Joe, I don't have an economics degree. I mean, I have a few graduate degrees, but and none of them are in economics or business. But you don't need one to know that
No. You
can't tax your way into prosperity. You can't just, you know, listen, Margaret Thatcher once said, you know, again, I don't want to accuse the governor of being a socialist because I know that word gets thrown around excessively and sometimes cavalier and irresponsible manner. But, you know, you can say, oh, well, if someone who's very liberal and, you know, radically liberal can maybe border on being socialist. At some point, as Margaret Thatcher once said, sooner or later, Joe, you start to run out of other people's money. And I think that that's a lesson that we can learn when it comes to what's the right way to approach spending. Now, again, between you and I can't predict what's going to happen on June 30th. I don't know if we're going to have another state shutdown. I don't know whether or not the legislature is really going to take the governor to task with some of these new taxes that he's proposing. And to me, and I said this in my opening monologue, I think millennials who came out in pretty good numbers from last year, again, it was a low voter turnout anyway, but there was a large amount of millennials that you saw at campaign rallies, you saw them on social media, and I'm thinking to myself, hey, these new taxes on Uber and Lyft and home sharing sites like Airbnb, these are going to hit you hard. So I don't know if you're
right.
Maybe in denial, maybe you're just naive. I don't know what the scenario is going to be, but this is going to be a tremendous economic slap in the face to not just millennials, but I think a lot of working class people that just said, hey, I like this guy's ideas. He's proposing this. He's offering free this and free that. And hey, listen, Joe, it's easy to run a campaign when you run on the basis of, hey, you know, we're going to be able to, you know, provide free this and free that. No offense, Joe, you know, I'll never forget that Churchill once said, the late, great Winston Churchill once said, you know, at 18, if you're not a liberal, you have no compassion. By the time you're 40 and you're not a conservative, you don't have a brain. And I know I'm sort of being a little, you know, and I know I'm sort of engaging in hyperbole with this, but I think it really lends itself to sort of like this disconnect that exists along the ideological spectrum when it comes to the way that we look at, you know, taxation I mean, listen, I think last week, you may have seen it in the Star Ledger, that the junior United States Senator, Cory Booker, very much like his colleague in the United States Senate, Bernie Sanders, was very adamant about, I think we can somehow create a program to give every American a job. But if you go on Senator Sanders' site, for example, there's no explanation, Joe, about how you go about paying for something like this. So I think that's where the disconnect exists when it comes to people talking about economics. Have you come across that as well?
Well, I got to go back to the comment you made about a lot of times people call them socialists. And you hear that name is thrown out a lot, right? Could you tell me one socialist nation in history that had open borders?
No.
Did Cuba have open borders?
No, they don't. You know what? If you end up in Cuba, if you want to end up in Cuba, good luck with that. You're gonna get a really rude awakening.
Did the old Soviet Union have open borders?
No.
Did East Germany have open borders? No, they didn't.
Oh no.
You know, so honestly, these people aren't socialists. They're morons. I mean, they're opportunistic morons. They don't even, and what kills me is these people that they call socialists wouldn't even understand the difference between a socialist, a fascist, a communist, or anything. Honestly, the stuff and the policies that they put out there is pure, unadulterated pandering. That's what it is. And call it what it is.
It is.
It's a typical politician that promises everything to everybody to get the job for what? I don't know. Ego. And then once they get in, they have to pay everybody off. So, come on. These people have no clue what socialism is and what socialist states, how the states operated with a socialist government. They never truly understood that. But going back to the whole millennials and the taxation of basically everything, eventually through actions from people like Murphy in the legislature enable these things, these taxes that, you know, whether it's a gym tax or whether it's an Uber and Lyft tax or whatever it is, they're going to wake up. I think they're going to wake up, and I think that time is coming very soon where there's going to be a great awakening in New Jersey and in states like New Jersey, the Californias, the Illinois, the Connecticuts, et cetera, that at one point or another, you're going to have a new generation of Americans that say, we've had enough, and you will have strong pushback, stronger than you've ever seen before, because they've set the stage on how they are in politics, number one. Number two, going to the companies and the way companies operate, one thing that these politicians don't understand is big companies that employ lots of people have stockholders. Those stockholders vote in the boards of directors and management to shepherd and run the company, right?
Mm-hmm.
If they're paying state taxes that are exorbitant, do you not think at one point or another they might push shareholder proposals on those companies to redomicile? It happened already. You have stockholders that are pension funds, state funds, foreign investors, people that live in every state or country around the world. They're dictating what these companies are going to do. So Bernie Sanders or Cory Booker could go cry in front of a microphone all he wants. But at the end of the day, the stockholders are who the board is beholden to. Good, bad, or indifferent. A lot of them are pushing more social, environmental, and governance issues. But at the end of the day, they want to return too. And that stuff could eventually come into play that's completely out of the hands of government. Two, the things that annoy me the most is somebody who's built businesses in New Jersey, runs a business in New Jersey, is growing his business in New Jersey. What annoys me is they roll out the red carpet for Amazon, but they kind of treat us like the redheaded stepchildren. Now, we don't really care about all the struggles you went through to build and succeed and grow in New Jersey. But, if we could get the big guy to come in and hire a bunch of people, let's give them everything they want. Oh, you? We're going to tax the hell out of you, regulate the hell out of you. We really don't care what you. It's how this state treats its businesses. I've brought these cases up. I've brought these more specific situations up to people I've known in the legislature, and they look at you and say, we should talk. Yeah, we'll love to hear from you. Could you tell me in the legislature, out of all the assemblymen and women and all the senators, how many of them started their own business, hired dozens or hundreds of people in New Jersey, and it's a real business, not a business that is on the backs of the taxpayer where it's a company that gets its work from the state or from the municipalities or from the county. I mean, a real business that brings in revenue from out of state or out of country, where they're serving in the legislature and they're there for us. I mean, I know that there's probably a few. I just off the top of my head can't name any of them.
No, listen, you're absolutely right, Joe. And folks, again, if you just joined us now here at 8:55 on the East Coast here on Blog Talk Radio, it's my pleasure to have Joe Caruso, the chairman of the Organization for Economic Growth here in New Jersey. You can check him out at www.njoeg.com. Joe, you mentioned a great dynamic in your narrative right now, and I sort of wanted to sort of expand upon it in the sense that I sort of wanted to, again, as an academic, I'm always having my thinking cap on, and I want to sort of pick your brain a little bit here about the knowledge that that you're bestowing on us tonight. But, in a scenario like the following, Joe, put yourself in the governor's office, in his inner circle, and he's coming to you for economic advice. What would, again, I hate to put you on the spot here, but give me at least three or four policies that you would look at the governor's train and say, Governor, I think, but actually, I know you wouldn't say I think. Governor, I know that if you pursue these three or four policies, we're going to tremendously reverse the economic downturn that we're living in right now. And I believe strongly this is going to really stimulate the New Jersey economy. What would you tell the governor if you're sitting across from him right now?
Well, number one, I think he needs to enact a real business council of small businesses, medium-sized businesses, and large corporations to start steering economic policy in the state and not political cronies. Two, they need to do an analysis or an inventory of states that New Jersey loses its businesses to, states like, North Carolina, or states like Connecticut, or states like Ohio, and do an exit interview to those companies to ask them why they are leaving the state, to put a checklist of things that we're doing poorly and address them, which we know is taxes. At the end of the day, it's going to be 90% of it's tax related, or cost of labor, cost of cost of living for their labor, et cetera. Three, I think it would be important, and this would be a nice analysis to do because he seems to do a lot of these think tank analysis of silly stuff, but why not interview businesses that reside in New York and Connecticut and Pennsylvania and have a serious discussion with them and ask them what would the New Jersey business climate have to be for you to redomicile here? I mean, that'd be a novel idea, wouldn't it? I mean, what would it take for you to move to New Jersey, and put that in your checklist? At the end of the day, the end of this discussion, that there's not three or four issues. There's one major overriding issue. They need to drastically reduce the corporate. They need to reduce the corporate taxes in the state to make it more competitive for companies to open up here, stay here, and move here. If the taxes are too high, it's the numbers game. You can't operate in New Jersey. Forget the regulations are secondary, and what the governor needs to hear, whether he believes it or not, because I have a difference of opinion when people come from a banking background versus, an entrepreneurial background where you built a business, created a product or a service, and sold it to people rather than, I have just a difference of opinion with bankers, especially what happened in the 08 crisis. But what he needs to hear is, one, corporate taxes need to be reduced to a point where it's much lower than our surrounding states. Two, they need a real economic council built by people who opened and run businesses in New Jersey that truly understand how difficult it is. And three, they really need to get into the heads of businesses that have left the state or businesses around the state to figure out, A, why did they leave, and B, what would it take for companies to come here? and then you could continue on that path. But taxes are the main issue.
Well, speaking of taxes, Joe, I mean, again, going back to the 70s when, you know, the experiment was let's introduce a state income tax. And over time, once the state income tax fulfills its need, there won't be a need for it anymore. As we all know, that ended up not being the case since the 70s, and it went nowhere. Would you suggest perhaps that maybe eliminating the state income tax could help bolster a better economic climate? Is that something that you would consider, or you even recommend to the governor and say, you know, listen, it works in other states. I think if we did away with it, it served its purpose in the 70s when it was instituted. We don't need it anymore. Is that a viable suggestion?
I think you can't pull that too quick, because the state does need revenue to maintain operations. But just like people like to hear progressive taxation, they should look at more of a 10, 15, 20 year policy of tax regression and start looking at things like, how do we reduce the taxes by cutting frivolous services? How do we reduce the taxes by trimming the bureaucracy? How much taxes could we reduce by, pension reform, which is, I'm telling you, it's a big, big issue with pension reform. How much could we reduce taxes by town and municipality consolidations, municipality and county consolidations of services? How could we reduce taxes by a full audit, by the way, which needs to be done probably by a real external auditor, not just on numbers, but on business practice of the school systems? And I know the NJA plays a big role in this. We know they're all powerful. We totally get this. I love it when you talk about school systems. Everybody, goes down to, well, you don't want to educate the children? You want to take schooling away from the children? No, we want to pare down the bureaucracy is what we want to do. And we want to make sure that the kids and the teachers are getting what they need and not the bureaucrats. But I think you got to look at your cost side of the fence and figure out how can we begin paring one side down to lower taxes on the other. It's a scale. It needs to be done on both ways. So they need to look at the major cost centers, and they need to have task forces that go in there and start figuring out how we pare down the expenses to pare down the taxes. And we need to have a regressive tax policy in the state as a whole. It needs to be embraced, and it needs to be understood. It needs to be communicated. And I think once that's done, and New Jersey is looked upon as a business-friendly climate, that I know that if I move there each year, it's going to get better for us to operate, because New Jersey has a lot of great talent and a lot of access to great talent, a lot of that's leaving as well. But if you're able to do that, and employers are moving to the state, you know, the next thing, they hire people. And guess what happens when they hire people? Unemployment goes down. Cost of the state's expenses go down. You could further reduce your overtaxation. And it's a snowball effect in the reversal. And again, guess what happens when you hire people in particular industry sectors? You have job scarcity. What does that do? It improves, wage competitiveness. So wages go up, tax receipts go up, or you could reduce taxes. So There's a business climate, there's a tax climate, there's a spending situation. So all of them need to be addressed intelligently. And I think what happens with the typical politicians is they go right to pandering, to the voter population on social issues, trying to avoid the real tax issues.
I'm glad you just verbalized it that way, because I agree with you. I believe that what's become very symptomatic of our political climate, Joe, not just in New Jersey, but I think nationally, is we're dealing with a certain segment of an ideology that becomes very much preoccupied with identity politics and thinking that that's going to resonate with an electorate, and not sound economic principles. And I say this to my students all the time, and they're mystified, because I'm someone that, by and large, Joe, I'm very much almost a libertarian in a lot of respects. I know that people listening to my show, I know last week I was very fortunate to have Matt Rooney, who's the editor-in-chief of Save Jersey, predominantly probably the most conservative blog in New Jersey. I also had Assemblyman Carroll from Morris County a couple weeks back. And then I also had State Senator Ronald Rice on, who, is maybe more of a conservative Democrat, but certainly, he has his his thought process when it comes to certain issues involving social justice. I think that what's happening, though, not just nationally, but more so in New Jersey, Joe, I think, as you said, I think it's becoming, the narrative is becoming convoluted. And it's really, to be honest with you, it's alarming because it's just, it's doing a disservice to us, the citizenry. And when you go, you know, when you go across New Jersey hosting workshops or you've spoken to legislators or even lobbyists, what's been sort of the feedback you received about the work that you're doing, the work that your organization is doing? Are there mixed reactions right now? Is the jury still out for a lot of the individuals that you come across in your day-to-day? What's it been like for you?
Well, I get a lot of blank stares. Does that help you? I get a lot of blank stares.
But does that come
either,
from like
either
legislators
they can't comprehend
or lobbyists or?
More legislators or elected officials on many levels. I get a lot of blank stares. I don't think, again, I go back to they don't understand exactly why we're doing what we're doing because it doesn't make any sense. I've gotten the, well, how are you financially benefiting from this? Are you making money from this? No. Everything is always like, that's the first knee-jerk reaction. You're only doing it, you're doing what you're doing for personal gain. Well, when people say that, my first reaction is, well, that's the only reason why you're elected then. You know, so.
Nice.
Yeah, but you know, I'm right. I mean, that's, I'm sure you could see it or you could envision that. You know, and you know what, to be honest with you, and I've heard that, you mentioned it before, the whole social justice thing. Is it social justice to overtax your population? Is it social justice to make your living so expensive that you have to retire in another state away from your children and grandchildren? Is it social justice where millennials can't afford to live here that they have to move out of state? Is it social justice to spend, you know, billions of dollars of taxpayer-funded school systems on kids that decide that they can't live here anyway and they leave and we're stuck with the bill? You know, nobody wants to address the financial aspect of social justice or, you know, the way that they've enslaved the state with taxation. They don't want to bring that up. You know, that's okay. But every other social justice is important, especially the fact that you have an elderly population or a retiree population that can't even afford to keep a roof over their head or pay their mortgage or pay their rent because it's so expensive to live here. So where's the social justice with all of that? They don't give a crap.
No, listen, Joe, you're right. And to sort of bring up a point you made before, and again, and I'm sure people listening to that might say, well, Fernando is going to say this because certainly he has a certain partisanship in the state of Texas. I'm a big fan of the state of Texas. And when Governor Abbott came out and made those comments, I'll be very honest with you, Joe, I was surprised that there wasn't more of a backlash, not against Governor Abbott. And I know that, listen, Governor Murphy certainly was not going to stay quiet. Governor Murphy was going to give a rebuttal and be defiant in the way that he would respond to Governor Abbott. But I just found it funny that I didn't. And again, listen, the liberal mainstream media is also very very complicit in distorting the narrative too. And we'll get to that in a minute because yeah. I think the way that economics is portrayed in New Jersey, I think the liberal mainstream media really does us the citizenry a disservice. But before we get to that, I was just surprised that there wasn't more of a backlash where, okay, fine, the governor got to, you know, okay, he got gut punched in by Governor Abbott in Texas, and he decided to punch back. Okay, great, you know, upmanship, you know, the scenario of testosterone, I got to answer back, I'm not going to stay quiet, fine. But I just found it odd that more, whether it was legislators or it was just members of the media that were saying, wait a minute, why is Governor Abbott saying this? Is he onto something? And I found the silence, the deafening silence, to be very disappointing. Because, again, I mean, I like Governor Abbott. If you look at the fiscal climate in Texas, I mean, they're a prosperous state. And I don't just say it because I love the state of Texas, but, I mean, I say it because I read data. You know, I look at numbers. I don't go by emotions here, Joe. I mean, I go by quantify. Listen, I'm academic. I live and breathe on looking at data and stats. And when I see that, I was disappointed that more people in New Jersey weren't saying, hey, wait a minute. Maybe the governor's onto something in Texas. I understand, you know, nobody wants to have another governor ridicule our state, but I was surprised there wasn't like this uproar about, like, wait a minute, I think Abbott's right.
Well, I mean, first, you know, and I'm not saying because I have a different viewpoint with people, and I think that, you know, Abbott did a great political move for himself, and it's probably a good move for a Republican in Texas where Democrats might be gaining some ground in some areas to say, hey, look how poor New Jersey is, and we don't want to end up like them, so let me attack him to get some media coverage. So maybe he did it just a little bit for political slash earned media, and I'm not blaming him, but you know, but it's sad that we're the joke. Why isn't it Connecticut? I mean, could he pick another state? I mean, so you know, you have to ask the you know yourself, especially if you're an elected official, Democrat or Republican, why are we the running joke? And really, maybe you should wake up and start to look at the numbers and the statistics and ask yourself a question. What are you going to do about it? And how are you going to get it done? Instead of sitting there saying, well, the legislature is controlled by the Democrats, the governor is controlled by the Democrats, we can't do anything. Or if you're a fiscally conservative Democrat that might say, well, I don't want to step out of party line. I don't want to have repercussions. I don't want to lose my seat in a primary. Well, you know what? Retire. If you're a politician, and you think that for whatever reason you're not doing what you should be doing in the best interest of the people in the state to combat things like being outed by the governor of Texas for being a disaster, and you're not willing to do the right thing for whatever reason, time to retire. Time to leave. Maybe they should pack their bags and move to Texas or some other state. But I think some of these people need to go.
Joe, I agree with you. And I agree with the premise that And it's funny you bring up the sense of Governor Abbott's, you know, very calculated political move to really, you know, emphasize the positives of what he's doing policy-wise in Texas. I had a guest on, I remember back in March, who's a business advocate, and she's a consumer advocate as well. And I remember making a point during our conversation on the show that that Governor Murphy is very emphatic about trying to make us the California of the East, and I said, hell no, I don't want to look anything like California. And I remember that I could hear her gasping for air saying, well, what do you mean? What's wrong with California? I'm like, wait a minute, this show's only 2 hours. I might need like 2 or 3 episodes with you just to be outlining what's wrong with California. And I just find it funny, Joe. Actually, let me rephrase that. I don't find it, but I find it frightening that this idea that trying to embody states like California or Washington State are in the economic best interest of New Jersey. That's just lunacy to me, Joe. It really is.
No, well, but again, you know, I was hoping, in my opinion, and I've said this to many people before, we should be an example to the other 49 states. I mean, we have so many things, and I know we're short on, I know the segment ends in a few minutes, but you know, New Jersey has so many blessings, whether the fact first, you know, we have the ability to offload hundreds of thousands of people of our workforce to New York because we're sitting right next to Manhattan, and we have, you know, shipping and transport and so many great companies that are here and all these universities that are here and everything else. There's so much more that should be done in this. This state should be an economic powerhouse, you know, and it's not. And again, I leave you guys with this. It's that if there is an elected official out there that's even listening to this, if you can't wake up and realize the situation in this state and push for good legislation, that not just in name only or for a speech on the steps in the state house in Trenton, but real meaningful legislation, clean legislation, not bundled with 70 other things, and you can't be a champion for that, whether it passes or fails, at least you could educate the voter population what you're trying to accomplish to fix things. You need to retire. You need to step down, and I'd be more than willing to set up a new fund to fund these politicians to get boxes and luggage and moving vans to get them the hell out of New Jersey and go someplace else where they could comfortably retire on their taxpayer-funded pension. And we could put capable people in the legislature to actually do the jobs that they're supposed to be doing.
Joe, that's very well said. And before I let you go, first off, I want to thank you for coming on tonight. You've been a gentleman. It's been a great hour of informative and very stimulating conversation tonight. I hope you enjoyed your time here on Politically Direct. And before I let you go, what I always like to do every week with my guests, you know, I spend pretty much an hour, not necessarily grilling my guests, but trying to have a conversation, and I'm asking the questions. Well, now, Joe, the floor is yours. Now you get to ask me a question, or as many as you like, because I've been doing it to you now. So, hey, if you want to pick my brain, the floor is yours. If you want to ask away, hey, I'm ready for you.
Well, let me ask you this. You had a message to our elected officials, our statewide elected officials, and you know that that message is going to carry meaning to them. What would you tell them?
I would say three things, Joe. I would say number one, and it's a lesson that we learned probably as young as, you know, when we got our first job, when we were 16, 17 years old, try to live and spend within your means. You know, fiscal responsibility is something that hopefully we learn at a young age and we try to practice throughout our adolescence and into adulthood. Secondly, I would say get competent people that understand economics, not politicians, not, you know, unions, not, you know, party bosses. Get, you know, get qualified, thoroughly educated. Again, and maybe I'm biased because I'm an academic myself, but get those that understand business, that understand, you know, taxation and understand how to create and stimulate an economy. And three, I would say you have to be held accountable, and when you're not, you need to step aside. That's if you're working in the interest of people, that should be your goal as public servants. That's what I would tell them, Joe.
Well, then, if that's the case, maybe it's time that people like you and myself start telling people like them that aren't listening or actually are not affecting change that maybe it's time to retire. Maybe soon we should start calling them out and start saying it's time for you to go. I mean, some of these politicians should be replaced with, like, I don't know, a bag of salt. Because a bag of salt might do a better job than them.
You know what, Joe? I agree with you. And I'll certainly, I've called out some legislators on this show out about their inability to really work for the taxpayers. And listen, I give you my word, when the governor comes on sometime in early June, I'm hoping, I'm just waiting to confirm that he and I are going to have a good conversation. I'm going to be tough. I'll be fair. But more importantly, I'm going to want answers because I think we deserve to hear them.
I can't wait for that. I can't wait.
Yeah. Well, again, and that's one of the things, Joe, that I take pride on this show is getting the good guests, getting the interesting individuals to come on my program. You are no exception to that. I want to thank you tonight for coming on after a long, busy day. You've dedicated an hour to the show. I hope you enjoyed yourself. I hope you tell your friends on social media and even word of mouth about your experience here on Politically Direct. And I hope you continue being a fan of the show and also of Insider NJ, sir.
Absolutely. Big fan of both. And I really appreciate it. And thank you so much for having me on.
Joe, thank you. Keep up the good work, man. God bless you. And have a great Father's Day coming up next month, okay?
Thank you, sir. You too.
All right. Thanks again, Joe. Folks, here at 9:20 on the East Coast, it's my pleasure again to welcome to the program Joe Caruso, the chairman of the Organization for Economic Growth, an outstanding nonprofit here in the Garden State. You can check him out online at www.njoeg.com. Wonderful information there. And again, I can't say enough about his team. I mean, he works with some of the biggest and brightest in New Jersey. And I can tell you that, you know, he's in good hands, and I know that they're in good hands because collectively I'm looking at this team And again, if you haven't had a chance, check out their website, www.njoeg.com. They're a great, great roster there of individuals that care about taxpayers, that care about fiscal responsibility and, you know, responsible economics here in New Jersey. And again, a shout out to my good friend Katie Siracola, the vice chairwoman of the OEG, certainly other individuals I've happened to meet via social media. Alex, and Alex, I apologize if I botched the name right now, the executive director, Alex Cuccinello. Again, if I messed it up, Alex, my deepest apology. I owe you a beer, sir, if that's the case. But a great staff that he works with there. Again, you can check it out on their website, www.njoeg.com. Certainly great information for you if you're looking to get really educated and understand the good work that they're doing to raise awareness about the necessity of responsible economic policies in New Jersey. So I can't say enough really about what a great guest he was earlier tonight. And folks, again, that's what we do here on Politically Direct. We bring you the best guests each and every week. And certainly we're hoping that you learn something on here, that you're stimulated, that you enjoy it, you're also entertained by what we discuss each and every week. And again, folks, if you missed any part of tonight's broadcast with my exclusive guest, Joe Caruso, the chairman of the Organization for Economic Growth, you can go to www.blogtalkradio.com/politicallydirectNJ. You can do so from any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet. If you have a topic or issue you want to hear about next week, folks, you can write to the show's inbox, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. I do read each and every email and I make sure to answer them. And I welcome all the feedback, both positive and negative. Actually, it's been very positive. I haven't received one negative email yet, so knock on wood, let's keep it that way. But again, folks, if there's something about this show you want me to improve upon, hey, I'm all ears. I'm here for you, my loyal listening audience. So again, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram @politicallydirectnj. More followers each and every day, as well as more likes on the content. I appreciate that. You can also follow me directly on Instagram @your_favorite_Fernando. Certainly, you'll see promo videos for my podcast here on Insider NJ. You'll also see promo videos for my other podcast that I host on Wednesday nights. As a matter of fact, it's a more local show here in Hamilton County. Great guests as well. You can go to that website, which is www.blogtalkradio.com/TalkinTheHudson, the award-winning Talking the Hudson, folks, the 2017 recipient of the Excellence in Talk Radio Award. And so, again, check it out here, folks. You can also follow me on Twitter @FernandoUribeJr. You can also like the page on Facebook, 340-plus likes and counting. So, again, I'm grateful to all the support online, all the shares, all the tagging and social media. That's what it's all about, folks. You know, that's how we get information out there expediently, expeditiously, and effectively. So, and we do that every single day. I appreciate all the love and support I get online here with Politically Direct. And folks, don't forget to check out Insider NJ by going to www.insidernj.com for the best coverage of the political scene throughout the state of New Jersey. Once you go on the main page, you can click on subscribe for the morning intelligence briefing, which gets delivered absolutely free and to your inbox each and every morning. So whether you're having cereal, maybe working out on the treadmill, walking your dog, maybe just sitting outside once you wake up with this beautiful weather and just looking at the sunrise, hey, check it out. It'll be on your smartphone or your tablet, also your notebook if you have it outside and you have Wi-Fi. Check it out, folks. The best coverage of the political scene each and every day comes to you courtesy of Insider NJ. All right, again, folks, whether it's on your morning commute, getting a daily workout in, walking your dog, doing laundry for my students, again, as the semester is winding to a close here, you're turning in your short papers at the end of the semester, finals, whether it's my students both past and present, best luck on your finals. I'm going to have to give my last final on Monday, and then the semester is over until I start teaching summer session at the end of May. So I have a few weeks of a break there, get to continue hosting here on Blog Talk Radio, folks. So, again, tune in for that. And whenever you do, trust me, you'll be happy that you did. And never forget, ladies and gentlemen, it's real, it's here, it's politically direct. Good night to our state capital, Trenton. a lot of friends that lobbyists out there working hard under the Golden Dome, working for different lobby groups, and, of course, everyone working hard in Trenton. Have a good one, ladies and gentlemen. I'll see you next week here on Blog Talk Radio. And don't you forget, let's keep on talking.